the Business Ethics Podcast, brought to you by the Business Ethics Alliance, exploring the ethical questions of today to create a more equitable tomorrow.
Welcome to the Business Ethics Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Peterson, and joining me today is a very good friend of mine. He'd be a good friend of yours if you live in the Omaha community, because this guy's involved in a lot of things that happen on the day-to-day basis, yearly basis of our city. Gerald Kuhn, thanks for coming, man.
Blake, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. It's an honor, man. I'm really glad to be able to finally come on the show.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it as well, because I'd thought about it. You'd be a great guest in the past, yeah. And then all of a sudden on LinkedIn, I see the story pop up that you were recently, you were doing this job when I met you, but I guess technically promoted to the director of HR for the city of Omaha. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's been a great honor. The mayor appointed me to the role after a good, great predecessor of mine, Franklin Thompson. He was a great teacher. And I'm just happy to have the honor to serve the city in this capacity.
Yeah, it's a big deal too. It's nothing to scoff at. It has a lot of responsibility. I'm sure they vetted through a lot of different people before they landed on you. So let's talk a little bit about your background, Gerald. Okay. How is it that we talked, you've got a whole story behind you, man. So as far back as you want to go, what brought you here to this point?
Okay, so graduated college and MBA thing didn't work out. So I had graduated with an undergraduate degree in criminal justice. Mm. Started working case management jobs in foster care and juvenile justice, and decided to get a master's degree in counseling and wanted to be a therapist. So did that for a couple of years, and then found out that I wanted to help more people, and being a therapist, you only help one person at a time. Mm. Or a caseload of people at a time, and so I wanted to be able to help the masses, and so I got another degree. I wanted to go to law school, but I had a young child at the time, and I imagine what that feels like, trying to study for the LSAT with a infant.
Ooh,
it was very difficult, so I let that dream go for a little bit, returned back to it, but got another degree in social justice, and then started working with different populations of people, from foster care to people with intellectual disabilities to Native Americans to juvenile justice, and then worked with kids for a while in the realm of secondary or post-secondary education, and the job came available to work with the mayor, and as the assistant director of human rights and relations, was vetted through 220 applicants, and was the assistant director. Did that for 4 years, and have recently been appointed as the director.
Man, that's awesome. And you just kind of brushed over the NBA thing not working. Now, you guys can't see him, but Gerald is a very tall man. And I'll tell you what, I'm a pretty tall guy. I'm usually the tallest guy in the room.
Yeah,
So whenever I can be around someone like you, I'm like, wow, this must be how everybody else feels.
Right,
all the time,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's incredible, too, because you obviously, were able to reinvent yourself kind of multiple times, right? There's kind of some preconceived ideas people have of somebody who is, when you say the NBA thing didn't work out, the fact you're even being considered in that conversation is an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah.
That is the 1% of the 1% who can even have a thought or idea that goes that far. But to transition like you have and kind of moved into helping people, it was something that, maybe people need to start recognizing a lot more athletes have that ability and they actually are doing that on a lot more, common basis, but it's impressive. So, you start out, you're counseling people, do you kind of measure your success on how many people's lives you can affect, a positive change in? What exactly is the way that you were trying to see, I have this goal I want to accomplish. How do you know you're accomplishing the goal, or you're moving in the right direction?
That's a great question. I just originally started out with, I wanted to help young kids, and I wanted to get around young people and mentor to them. And that kind of transitioned to juvenile justice and helping those kids, and then foster care, helping those kids. And then opportunity came to be a supervisor, and, you know, just opportunities presented themselves in front of me. And my grandfather always told me to never turn down opportunity when it comes knocking. And I didn't do that. I opened the door and just presented myself as just a whole man, and things worked out for the best.
That's great. That's really good advice from Grandpa, man. But not only to, you know, answer the door, but don't be afraid, you know, to take that risk. I mean, there's absolutely risk involved when you decide to make these life changes. You go back to school, you have the kids and the wife who depend on you and whatnot, and deciding to change industries, change careers is a really big deal.
Yes.
You know, it's a big change. What are some of the things that you saw when you were working with kids in the foster care system and whatnot? Was there, like, certain things that stood out to you that kind of helped you guide you onto this path you're on now?
Definitely. I was working with youth reintegrating back into the community in Detroit, Michigan. And Detroit is a different population. They have obviously have a lot higher crime there in the city. But I was able to see the barriers, man, just the education and the importance of education and the importance of having a strong support system. It really affects kids if they have that strong support system. And then when they don't and they're left to their own devices, you know, I can recall being a teenager and thinking I knew everything. And so if you have no one else to correct that behavior, you think that you know everything and you go down that, continue to go down that wrong path. And I saw that, and I saw that it was not just the individual things, but there were some systemic barriers that were in place that were holding kids back and were affecting them negatively. And I wanted to address those issues because I'm only one person, and if I can only affect change in the on the caseload of kids that I have, then that's the only the extent of my reach. But if I can change the system, if I can change those barriers or remove those barriers, then I can affect the change for thousands of kids.
Yeah, and there's, you know, some people that their skill set is more suited to just do one case at a time, right? And those are kind of like the angels that you run into that could probably, you know, earn a lot more money doing something else, but they stick it out and they love their job and they love the change they can enact. So I think it's important, though, that if you do have the ability to rise above, level up, that you do, because you're not leaving anybody behind, you know, and you're trying to bring more people up with you.
Yes, exactly.
On the way. And with the topic of children in that situation as well, you know, you brought up a lot of good points. Obviously, there's many different reasons behind that. And myself being in the financials industry, you know, I notice a lot of, like, generational trends that will happen, you know, within families and whatnot. Yeah. And you're talking about potentially a lack thereof, right? Because of that structure is not there. I think a lot of the study shows, or a lot of the data shows, you know, it just takes one adult, not necessarily a parent, who really cares about a child, and their chances of success, you know, skyrocket.
Exactly.
And so is that something that, you know, you think you're trying to accomplish, is putting that person in front of the kids? Are you trying to address something at a systemic level that would make it where that situation didn't occur in the first place? Like, how is it that you're able to actually try to help from this up here 30,000 foot view?
Well, from my upbringing, a lot of times I run into my colleagues, and no fault of theirs, they were born into good situations. They were born into families where they had an engineer in their family, or a doctor, or a lawyer, or somebody with or on their own business. But in my situation, I didn't have any of that. And from the financials perspective, I didn't know what debits and credits were until college. Mm-hmm. I didn't know no one taught me how to balance a checkbook. No one taught me those things. And so from the level that I sit at now, I have friends who are on the school board. I have friends who are in those places that can affect change. And if I can, through just general conversation, bring up those barriers that the kids have that are coming from that low socioeconomic background, then I can influence them to make the right decision and make the right call when things come across their desk.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it and a great way to approach it. I mean, it's going to take a village to really affect this change. You're not going to be able to do it all on your own. So get to in front of the people who can make those changes, right?
And exactly.
Financial literacy is a huge missing piece that we have in our school system. I think our education system is kind of set up to identify the engineers and the scientists.
Yes.
And because we want to get those people working for us, right? Get them pushing the country forward. And then everything else is kind of like you'll fall in. You'll find your place as you go along. But, I mean, I didn't even know what a true credit score was or how it was comprised. Right. Absolutely did not know that, you know, by the time I exited high school, got into college. And, you know, you have to learn it through personal mistakes
exactly.
a lot of the time, right? And then you're like, holy cow, it took me years to bounce back from that one little mistake, you know, and it's tough. So imagine if you never get that education.
Exactly. And then for me, I still struggle personally. Until recently, I just recently found an agency that was able to help me financially and give me some advice. But I mean, you don't know what you don't know. And I just started making pretty significant amount of money here recently and just didn't know why. I've made over six figures for quite some time, but then I never knew what to do with it. I never knew how to set myself up in position or how to save to be able to round that corner, to be able to have a nest egg if things go wrong, or be able to have that saving, that type of savings if there comes a rainy day.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then it just keeps on layering. Right. And then all of a sudden you're able to, you get those footings in place. And then now it's like, okay, what can I do for my kids?
Yeah.
Now generational becomes a discussion. Right. And so it's like, you have to have the full blueprint and you got to, you know where you're going from the bottom and start there and then take it up. And so a lot of times you see people that I think they're planning for the wrong thing. Right. Yeah. They're not taking a holistic approach. They're not looking at the full picture. Instead, they're just like, no, it's really important that I just focus on this one spot. And it's like, well, you're forgetting about everything else. It's like, yes. I'm going to only save because I want to pay for my kids to go to college. Correct. It's like, that's great. You're going to send them to college. But then, like, which one of them are you going to move in with? You know what I mean? Like, which one of them are you going to move
right,
in with
exactly.
when it comes time?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't work anymore. And are they going to be cool with that? Is their wife or their you know husband going to be cool with that at the time or
exactly.
what? So, yeah, well, that's great. Absolutely happy to hear that you started working with someone else. And now you can take these things that you learned and pass them on and hopefully work with some of the kids in that regard. So now that you're the director of, you know, human rights and relations, obviously, for the city of Omaha, you have a lot kind of underneath you to manage, right?
Yes.
And something that we talk about, our first time we met and then also a little bit before we started recording was how you interact with small businesses. And it's going to be a lot of small businesses because, quite frankly, that's most of the businesses, especially in a town like Omaha, right? There's only so many Kiewits, only so many Union Pacifics, you know? So what is your interaction with business, do you think, on kind of a regular basis? And how do you view your position within this whole system we have going, you know, as far as being an assistant, someone to help these businesses, you know? What do you see?
Great question. So I'll give you a little context. And back in 2009, the state got rid of affirmative action. And we needed to replace it with a program. So we replaced it with the Small Emerging Business Program, which is a race and gender neutral program. And it's geared to help those who start their business in economically depressed areas. And we call those tier one areas. So if you have a business in one of those tier one areas, the city will give you preferential treatment or set aside or reserve to be able to bid on a certain project. And my job as the director of human rights and relations is to uphold the mayor's goal of 14% of all small and emerging businesses. 14% of all city contracts will go to small emerging businesses. And I commend the mayor a lot because where the city is grateful to have the Kiewits, the MCLs, the Samsons, those big companies that are anchors in this community. We also need those small emerging businesses to keep everything regulated and to give the hope and dream to those small businesses that they can one day be the next Kiewit or the next MCL or the next big business or next Hawkins in the city of Omaha. So we, in the Human Rights and Relations Department, we vet those businesses. We make sure that they are small and emerging businesses and they meet those NAICS codes and those guidelines. And then we teach them how to bid for the city, bid on city work. And on, if they're not at that level, we will send them over to the Greater Omaha Chamber. And they have a great program called REACH, and they will train them up and then teach them how to bid on the city contracts as well.
That's great. So you're not only helping the people that qualify, but finding those who are, you know, on the cusp, just need to change a couple things, and helping them on their way to get there. And I mean, it's so smart, I think, that there's, you know, a real incentive for the government to interact with these small businesses that are specifically coming out of those areas, because you know we spend so much money trying to end poverty. Yeah. I mean, we throw in billions and billions at it a year, but yet somehow it just stays the same.
Yes.
You know, if we're coming from a pure metric standpoint, I think that the standard of living has probably increased as a whole. I would say, you know, things are getting, stuff like that, it gets better, but it's still, there's certainly still a have and a have nots. I would think so. Some of the businesses, you know, what do you need to qualify? What is your guys' metric of a small business? And, you know, obviously, maybe, you know, the drawing the lines as far as who qualifies and not, who does that?
Oh, awesome. So, start with the NAICS codes, which are your national codes for to determine what type of business you do. So if you are a contractor who does all flat work, all concrete, you have to stay under a certain threshold based on the average profit or average income of someone who does that type of work in this area. So it's going to be different than somebody who does drywall or somebody who does different type of construction or painting. And then as far as, I'm sorry, I forgot the second part.
Yeah, then as far as, you know, so that was kind of the income side of, you know, how much they do that. But then how do you decide that the business is in the right area?
Oh,
you know, who draws the map, the lines of the map?
If there is 30% of the population in the in that zip code has to be under the poverty level, the national poverty level, and then to be called a tier one area. And we have some of those areas in the city, which 6111 or 6110 or 6104, those areas that are generally on the east side of the city. Qualify for the small and emerging business. And so if you have, if your business is headquarters in that area, and you apply for, you want to apply for a city contract, you're given, we have a set asides, but also we've the city's partnered with UNMC, and also we have partnered with OPS, the school district. And so they utilize our small emerging business list as well, which is great. So the contractors just don't depend on those RFPs that come out from the city, but they also get sent work from or RFPs from the from UNMC and from OPS.
Yeah, some of the bigger players that might have some of these large contracts, but they don't know where to go. You want to give your money to the right people, but you already have the list of businesses for them. I think that is essential to ending poverty, and I think it's that piece of having businesses be successful in those zip codes, in those areas, is mandatory. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answers for everything, but it's like, if you're just throwing money at it, it's not working. But if you empower a whole community and give them good paying jobs, what that seems like that's going to affect some change.
Yeah, that definitely moves the needle. Than just, you know, I believe that you need some programs because you need nonprofits to teach those soft skills and to address some of those issues, but you also need a strong economical background and a strong economic infrastructure in the city to be able to sustain those businesses when they are ready, when those soft skills have been developed, and now you have a person ready to go out and start business, because college isn't for everyone, and going to work a regular 9-to-5 job isn't for everyone. There's some individuals out there that have that, who are visionaries and want to start their own business, but they just need that coaching, and they need that knowledge of what to do with the money, or what to do with their vision once they have it.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are some skills that aren't taught, you know, unless they could be taught in some collegiate programs. Absolutely. Right. I guess, you know, they could be. But there's, you probably talk to any entrepreneur out there with and without a degree, they'd probably tell you they learned most of it on the job going through it, or from mentors of their own that they've connected with along the way. And if you don't have those mentors, because no one else that you know around you is doing what you're doing, those connections aren't being made, you can just spin your wheels forever.
Yes.
You know, I do a lot of work in valuing businesses and how to create value in a business. And it's, if you don't really know where to set your aim, then you're going to be stagnant, you know, forever. And some of these businesses, that's exactly what it is. It's just like, maybe it's just an income stream, and it's never going to be built into something where they have many employees and are really becoming a Kiewit, like you said, right? They had to start somewhere, obviously. They were something much smaller at one point in time, and you know, you got it takes a long time and a lot of connections to make that happen. So you're kind of facilitating those relationships between the business owners and schools and whatnot.
And and so when they have, when the city does have a big contract that goes, request for bid that goes out, we have we bring in all of our contractors and all of the general contractors, along with those specialized services, and whether that be a final cleaning company or a drywall company or electrician or a plumber, and we introduce those businesses to whoever is going to be the GC or the general contractor on the project. So they can meet and foster that relationship, and then bid on some of the smaller work and subcontract their services out.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Well, so we're talking 14% of the budget. Is that number constantly changing? Do you have an idea of just how much this program kind of yields? Or?
So city contracts, we do anywhere from about $320 million to, I've seen, $430 million worth of work in a year. So we want 14% of that to go to those small emerging businesses. We want the maybe you only have one or two employees. If you're an electrician or you're a painter or you do flooring, there was one example of a guy who was going to leave the city of Omaha because he wasn't getting the type of work. He did flat work, did concrete. Then the mayor put a issue out there where we can now have we fix road maintenance, and we do about 200 and I think there was a an issue that was put on the ballot where we voted to have street maintenance and to the tune of 200 and something million dollars a year, and now approximately, and now we have that company has gone from making $150,000 in gross sales or gross profit a year, now is doing about $5 to $6 million a year.
Wow!
In the span of 3 years, so that's awesome.
Yeah. So then, what is the next step? Obviously, so you're bringing in businesses, you're giving them this opportunity, and then if you guys do your job right, they're no longer going to qualify for some of these, you know, your program in specific anymore. Perhaps they then qualify for other government programs. So what is like the next step, and how are we helping businesses take that?
So we're always recruiting businesses. We want to find those businesses who haven't plugged in with the city yet, but those businesses who grow, that I was telling you about, the one that went from 150,000 to doing over 5 million a year. We want to have that business now mentor to the smaller businesses and teach them how they did it. And then if they get a contract, so maybe subcontract with that business and learn from the bigger businesses while the other business is transitioning out and able to bid on work, not only in the city of Omaha, but other work in the state or around the country.
Yeah, because I'm sure after they were to complete a few projects on this, we'll call it a smaller scale, but that's just, I mean,
yeah.
I take it it's because you can't give a huge, you know, project to this definitely. Small business, because they're going to fall flat on their face, and it's not going to be fair to them. So once you give them kind of these small potatoes and they get their, they grow a little bit, then they're able to actually start bidding on those larger projects, right? And so they have the connections with the city, and hopefully, I mean, it is a matter of who you know. As unbiased or as, you know, you want to try to be, it's like those personal connections make a difference between you landing a contract and not.
Yes.
And so you guys are kind of creating that with by doing this as well, giving people their first opportunity and letting them make those connections.
Absolutely. You know, we want to foster those relationships with the contractors, because if I'm a general contractor and I know you do great painting or do great drywall work, I may take a chance on you one time, and if you do great work, then I want to hire you back, and I want to hire you again and on the next project I receive. And so that's the type of relationship we try to foster and build within the Small Emerging Business Program and through the REACH program as well. The REACH has been awesome with connecting those big businesses with a small business to mentor to them and to help them grow. And it's amazing feeling seeing a business that was going from $0 to their first year making some money and turning a profit, and then them bidding on $1 million projects. I mean, it's like seeing a child grow up, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you're very proud.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of that.
I'll bet. That's got to be fulfilling to see.
Yes.
You know, and then you hope that those businesses stay in the communities that they're started in and start to try to make, you know, change there.
Yes.
Which is where I think it needs to come from, you know, personally. I agree with you as well. There needs to be programs in place. You know, I know that, I mean, my grandmother, you know, without food stamps, don't even know where my family would have ended up. You know, would I even be here today? I'm not really sure. However, you want to hope that obviously people need those programs. They got to be there. But, you know, what was the change that allowed her to get off them was she finally found a job that was able to pay enough that she could afford it. You know what I mean? And those jobs have to be there for people to get. It's not as easy as just getting in your car and driving 30 minutes for everybody.
Right.
You know, people forget that. People that are in these communities, you know, even people that aren't, everybody has their own situation, but I'd say predominantly you could say it's like if you only can travel so far, you know, and those opportunities aren't there, how are you ever going to make that change? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
People want to point to the outliers, and you want to point, well, look at that. This person did. Look what that person did. I like to kind of turn that back on myself and just say, would I have made it out of that situation?
Right.
Did I have what it takes? Could my bootstraps have been pulled enough that I could have gotten out of that and done so much better than, you know, the vast majority of people in it? Probably not.
Right.
You know what I mean? For being honest with yourself,
You
know? So it's good to see that these kind of programs exist and that they are working, you know?
Yeah.
So is... You work with the mayor, obviously, pretty closely. You work with a bunch of business owners. You work with the Chamber of Commerce. What is the overall, you know, tone that you kind of get from businesses in Omaha and how they are interacting? Do you think that it's, you know, there's a tension between the government and businesses? Is it a good relationship? What's it like?
It's actually been very fulfilling. You would think that these big business owners would try to hide the secret sauce, if you will, of how they made it. But no, they are the citizens of Omaha, and these business owners are very giving, and they're very forthright in telling these small businesses on how they made it, and not only just letting them know how they made it, but they will reach a hand down to help them up and say, hey, well, we'll try you out on this project. And they're very willing to give them an opportunity to get better, and they'll go above and beyond and assign a project manager to that small business and say, hey, this is how you do this, and this is how you bid, or this is how you get over that bonding hump. Because that's the biggest problem with these small businesses is they don't have the capacity yet to be bonded for a high amount over $1 million.
Right.
The big businesses, the MCLs, the Kiewits, the Samsons, they have been awesome. And Hawkins has an apprenticeship program. And so they hired they've hired a few high school students and got them on the apprenticeship track. So these businesses have been very instrumental in bringing the small businesses along.
That's great. I think that's really important. If you're trying to like play everything so close to the chest, you can't help anyone out because you're afraid of maybe what market share they can take from you. Maybe you got to look at your product.
Right.
Maybe your product isn't that good.
Right.
You know, you're scared theirs is better. Or what? You know what I mean? Yeah. At the end of the day, you got to hope that you can compete still. Maybe, if we didn't do that and you just allowed all the small businesses to fall off, you might feel good because you are now a monopoly in a sense in the community. But think about all the work that Kiewit can't do.
Yes.
Right? There's the work that Samson, they cannot do because it's just not, they don't have the time for it. You know what I mean? In the vast, scheme of things. So we need small businesses and we need them to do well. And it sounds like obviously that is kind of the main part of your job.
Yes.
Right? To help them along the way.
Yes,
Whatever happens, do you ever find yourself in a situation where you have to kind of, check yourself or your team or something like that? Because, obviously there's a lot of money on the line here. We're talking, 14% of hundreds of millions of dollars. It can affect a lot of change for whoever is awarded these contracts.
Yes.
And obviously it can deal a great blow to somebody who is not. So is there ever a time you have to have like systems in place to make sure that we're not handing it out to one of our buddies, for XYZ?
Yes.
What does that look like?
Excuse me. So we absolutely have those systems in place to make sure that a city employee isn't receiving, it doesn't just start a business and can bid on city work. So there's an award system set up with each city department. And so there's an ethics committee that will review all of that. And then my department as the Human Rights and Relations Department as a third party entity reviews those contracts. And then once it's awarded, it has to go around and be signed by the department that issued the RFP, the Human Rights and Relations Department director, the finance director, and the mayor's office finally signs off on it. So there, it goes through four steps before that bid gets awarded.
Right. So it's like, if you're into the conspiracy theories and you think somebody's, pushing the needle one way or another, you'd really have to get a lot of different people who have a lot on the line, to go along with what you're doing. So it'd be hard to do.
And then once the all those four entities sign off on that, then that award goes down to city council and it's on three readings. So the first one is the public announcement. So we announce it to the public like, hey, this company is going to get this this contract. And then the second hearing on the second week is the public hearing. And that's when you any citizen can come down and say, hey, this isn't right. Or, hey, we approve or we support this project. And then the third reading is when it goes out.
Yeah, people kind of, I don't know, it's really easy to be like, the government's not listening to us, or the government, I do this. They don't realize how many opportunities are just like that, where you can go in and you can voice your opinion.
Exactly.
And you can convince people, because it is a lot of times, who is on the city council, right? Sure, people, is it elected position?
Elected,
it's an elected position, but nonetheless, they are just people.
Yes.
You kind of forget that. It's like just the mayor is also just a person.
Yes.
So if you can really get your argument in there and state your case and lay out facts or something that are contrary to the way they are currently handling things, there is a path, obviously, to making change and being a participant in your government system.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always checks and balances and anything that has to do with any municipality or the government on a federal level on down to the local level, there has to be checks and balances because you're talking about people's tax dollars. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And what do you kind of see? So you've gotten to witness a lot of different businesses, I'm sure.
Yes.
I've come forward, right, and shown. And now, am I right in assuming it's going to be mostly people in the construction side of things?
Yes.
Like you said, all the way to general contractors, though, so there's a wide array of different services, but you're not looking at necessarily a tech company isn't bidding on things, are they? Or?
Surprisingly, depends on how in-depth in tech you want to go. So if there is a – you'd be surprised on how the sewer system is. You'd be surprised on how technological – I can't pronounce the
right,
word.
Yeah.
But how savvy and how much tech goes into the sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
And so those companies who – want to bid on if they there's a new way to separate our sewers water, we have to find a way. It's called our CSO project, our city sewer separation project. Basically the EPA said, hey Omaha, you have all of your sewage water and your drainage going into the same pipe, you guys need to separate that. And so there's a big process in that. There's a lot of tech that actually goes into separating your sewage water and your drainage water. There's a lot of good benefits that come from separating that water, because the drainage water, if unchecked and everything, that water goes directly into the Missouri River. And so you want to make sure that water is as clean as possible going into the river, and so that it doesn't affect the marine life that is in the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never knew that. You know, I actually spent some time on the river for the first time this past summer, and I think that's like a hidden thing that nobody knows about in Omaha.
Including me, because I've never been out on the river yet either.
Point exactly, man.
Right.
People live here forever. They have no idea. I'm telling you, it's actually a pretty cool thing. So if you're listening to this, try to find a friend with a boat. That's what I did. don't buy one yourself, because those things are expensive. But yeah, that is a huge project, a huge undertaking. And so I'm sure there's going to be, oh gosh, that has to be a gigantic, not only cost to it, but there's going to be a lot of different people involved in making that happen, right?
There's a lot of different sensors that goes into that. So, and the city generally bids those out and tries to find different businesses who have those type of sensors or who does that type of business and hire them to bring them in to do the work.
Yeah, that's great. And it's great things. And I mean, I love this program and the way that the city approaches it, because it is so empowering to these small business owners, and it gives them access to jobs like that.
Yes.
That they can kind of make a name for themselves if they do well on.
Exactly.
Right, in the community, and that's a big deal. It's not just some small, like, go fix the pothole over there, sir. It's something very, I mean, that's a lot of work, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, there's even small businesses that do fencing. I mean, because every project has to be fenced off, and there has to be some type of barrier between the general public and that construction site. So there's a lot of people who make good money and make a living off of just providing fencing for construction projects.
There are endless ways to make money in this country. It's endless. I never even knew that was its own thing. I mean, when I was in the oil field, I put up the fences. That's what they paid me for. You know,
you
put up your own fence around stuff. But it makes sense that you wouldn't have that just all rolling around your construction trucks, right?
You
have to be even more overhead. It'd be just a whole other expense as a business owner. That's construction's got to be expensive.
Yes.
You know, as it already is.
Yeah.
Employees are going to be insanely expensive. And yeah, that makes sense, man. Well, that's all great. That's really cool things. I love hearing all that, and thank you. I'm really happy that it has somebody like you at the helm of this program, just because our time, you know, talking together, you're a genuine person. You're just trying to help people out. You're a normal guy. You're not, you know, there's nothing nefarious that I've caught onto yet. That's for sure, man. I think that's what it takes. And people are, I don't want to say everybody, because it's not everybody, but some people just have a different, like their opinion on people who'd be in your positions, can be, you know, created from movies and headlines, and who's on the headlines of people messing up.
Yeah.
There's not enough headlines about the good things that Gerald's doing on a yearly basis, or people in your team, right?
Definitely.
It's only the people who mess up and make mistakes that they're going to be reporting about, you know?
Well, I appreciate those comments, and I just want to serve the city of Omaha. And if there is an agency, if you own a business, or you're thinking about starting a business in anywhere in development or construction, please contact the Human Rights and Relations Department. I will personally either walk you through it, or I will have one of my staff members walk you through the whole process.
That's great. Yeah, and even if they don't, if you're not in that, if you don't think you're in the zip code, you know, that would qualify for this program, I'm sure you guys are probably more than happy to still point people in the right direction.
Definitely. So that's just the tier one. That we have a tier two, which still sometimes, if there's not a tier one agency that can handle that type of work, then we immediately go to the tier two. And that is just about everyone else who qualifies as a small emerging business.
Okay, so then it's really more about size, less about location.
Yes.
Do you guys ever take into account some of the intangible things a business might have as far as like, you know, oh, well, these people are really involved in the community versus a business who we don't see that much activity from? Is that ever in your equation?
Yeah. So it's a great question, and this is a perfect segue. So the with the small emerging business, if there is a city contract over $50,000, that automatically triggers that business has to do an economic equity and inclusion plan, in which that agency or that company has to either educate the community or put some dollars into that community or hire people from that community to be able to obtain that work. So they have to have a plan on how they plan to engage the community and make the community better with the contract.
That's awesome, because you can do it whichever way you want to.
Yes.
You just have to do it.
Yep, you just have to submit a plan on how you plan on doing it.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah.
That's good, man. And I like that, you know, this whole conversation that we've had, you know, I really feel like you are inclusive of business owners. There's never been a time in which you've said, really talked about anybody who doesn't qualify.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's all about, you know, including all the businesses in here, and, you know, rising tides, you know, lift all ships or whatever they say. And so
that's exactly right.
Everybody, right? Well, I do. I know that we're getting close to wrapping up, but I did read in an article written about you, which everybody, you should go, you know, Google Gerald Kuhn. You should go read the article. I think it was on like Sixth News or something like that. It was great. They talked about you having even aspirations for potential mayor run in the future. Yes. Huh? Tell me about that. Huh? That's a cool goal to have.
Our current mayor, Jean Stothard, she has mentored me. She's been a great. I've just admire her leadership thus far, and being the only female mayor to be only mayor to be elected three times is a great accomplishment, and to be the first female mayor in the city of Omaha is an awesome feat. So I'm glad to be able to have to see that leadership every day, and she's inspired me to want to lead this city and to and continue greatness and to lead this city forward. So one day soon, if the cards align and if I still have this ambition, I would love to run for mayor and be the leader of this city one day.
Yeah, and that takes, I mean, it takes a level of fortitude, right? To be in that position. And And, you know, bless you for even being willing to, because a lot of times, you know, sometimes the people that going into politics are not the ones you might want there, as we've seen by this, like, George Santos person, if that is his real name,
right.
You know, that we see in the Senate. And so to have somebody like yourself, you know, I think that's kind of a natural way to get to the point where you're like, you know what, I could see myself as mayor and I could create positive change, is that you came into this not expecting that. You came, you know, you came into this work out of the goodness of your heart and wanted to enact change. And as you've come along, you're like, wow, I can actually do a lot.
Yes.
And I'm pretty good at this thing. And if I do keep on progressing, that is kind of the natural area you'd end up eventually.
Exactly.
Right. So that's cool. Well, I mean, I support, I'm putting it in right now, let everybody know my vote is already accounted for. Don't even try to come and get me. Gerald, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I appreciate what you're doing for Omaha, and I can't wait to see all the good things you're going to accomplish, man.
Well, it's been an honor, man. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate you bringing me on the show and even thinking of me to come and speak to your audience, so I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Business owners and government need to get along.
Definitely.
Dang it.
Definitely.
Right?
We can make a lot of money together, and we can move the city along positively and have a lot more development, a lot more amenities for the citizens of Omaha. It's a great place to live, work, and play.
That's right. Well said. And you're maybe even director of tourism as well. Great place to work, play. I got it. All right, Gerald. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Business Ethics Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the Business Ethics Podcast.